Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. This is the day we do Mythbusters, and our co-host is Chris Rossini. Chris, welcome to the program today.
Great to be with you, Dr. Paul. Thank you.
Well, good. What kind of problems are we going to solve today, and what kind of myths do we have to deal with?
Well, this problem is bigger than us. Unfortunately, we're going to talk about the federal debt. And in a few months, it's going to cross an amazing number of $20 trillion that the U.S. government is going to owe. And that comes out to $160,000 per taxpayer. So the first subject that we're going to cover is a rational one when you see a big disaster like this is, how do we get here? What happened? So, Dr. Paul, please start with that.
So we have to start this with making the assumption that this is not a myth, is what you're telling me. It's no fake news. This is the real stuff. We owe a lot of money, and you want to know, how did we get here? Well, you know, it's not something brand new. Even Adam Smith talked about this, and it was always a disaster. Debt does countries in. So it's nature. It's something for nothing. Individuals always like to think that they're going to win at the lottery, and that's what motivates some people in gambling and this sort of thing. And countries are like that. They believe that they can satisfy the people, and that you can have endless spending and keep getting reelected. The real tragedy is, on the initial stages of spending extra money and running up debt and delaying the payment, there's political support for this. Because if you had to immediately tax people for the spending, the congressmen wouldn't be as popular. They might not get reelected. But just think of the difference it would be if you had to pay for the war as you went along. Wars are never fought by people donating or lending money to the government. Inevitably, it's supported by printing more money or debasing the currency one way or the other, or stealing the money from somebody. So it's a convenience for people, but nothing is for free. But the big problem with having the debt and passing the debt on to somebody else is the people who might have benefited from it aren't the ones that are going to end up paying for it. So let's say that the retirement people, the Social Security beneficiaries and people who get medical care that never paid into it, they're doing fine and they feel good about it. And the people who might even be paying for it feels good about it because they're getting treatment. But the real payment goes to somebody else. And if it's put into a national debt, you can delay it sometimes for a generation. You don't have to pay back. Now, what are the odds of us dealing with this? $20 trillion sounds like a whole lot. Well, the history shows that it never gets paid. It always has to be liquidated. And there's a system of ongoing liquidation of debt, which means the debt, if you were looking at it in 1913 dollars, when the Federal Reserve was started, it's not that big, because the debt is now in debased currencies. So this is why the politicians and the Federal Reserve work together to purposely debase the currency to diminish the real debt. So if you have this, say, and they don't have control on the debasement, they can devise a program where they print a lot of money, but they can't quite control exactly who's going to get the penalty and how fast the debasement will occur. So when you debase the currency, let's say the QEs that we've been putting up for the last 10 years, if all of a sudden the people recognize, oh, there's a lot of money circulating, there's a lot of counterfeit going on there, and prices go up, and then all of a sudden, if the value of the dollar goes down, you might be able to eliminate half of the debt. So the debt is important, but not so much because it's a real debt of $20 trillion. It's because it finances things that shouldn't be financed. It produces a system where the welfare state can expand, the size of government expands, and the warfare state expands. And it seduces everybody into feeling pretty good about it. And for example, like today, a lot of people are feeling good. Well, we have a new manager in town, and he'll be able to handle the $20 trillion debt. But guess what? The $20 trillion debt's going to go up. It is not going to go down. You can't decide that all of a sudden we have to massively expand military spending and massively expand infrastructure spending because people feel good about that. Yes, as long as the people will take the dollar, the debt is going to continue. It's a convenience. It's too politically difficult to actually cut spending and work toward that down. Now, there were a few people in our early history that actually did that. People like Jefferson and Andrew Jackson's and other, they didn't like that and they would work it out. But we live in a different world today. And after the 20th century of welfare warfare, this debt is going to be going up, not down.
Yes, Dr. Paul, every minute in the United States, as we're speaking right now, multiple American babies are being born. And as they take their first breath, they have a government that's waiting for them with a crushing debt burden once they start earning money on their own and paying taxes. Is this moral?
It's absolutely immoral. And the system is immoral for the various reasons. One is it's morally equivalent to counterfeit. If a new country comes about and they start a country and they say, oh, well, we need a Federal Reserve and we need to have money, so we're going to print pieces of paper and make it money, nobody would believe them. You money comes into the market in a natural way. It usually has real value. The metals have been picked out, silver and gold, for 6,000 years. But then they get destroyed, and they get destroyed by an immoral principle of substitution, and that is counterfeiting. Because if you or I did what the Federal Reserve does and pass it out, even if we had the printing press, which was identical to the government printing press, and nobody could tell the difference, people could say, oh, yeah, well, that's not fair. That's immoral because, you know, that's going to hurt people and that will cause inflation. But the moral principle of money and how we take care of it and all this spending, I think, is most of the time ignored. There are economic consequences. We talked about that, the business cycle and the financing of special interests. That's an immoral system when some people benefit and other people don't. Some people benefit and the other people have to pay the bills. And the consequences of inflation when the prices go up is much harder on the average person. And this is why, you know, populism right now is popular for everybody. Everybody is a populist. But how many are talking about the real reason the middle class is getting wiped out? It has to do with the Federal Reserve, and it has to do with their purchasing power. Of course, you know, the populist Bernie Sanders knows what to do. Well, what we need is a $15 minimum wage, not realizing that the machine is going to replace about 10 jobs. But yeah, and he's not looking at that the people are suffering, but they won't hone in on the real problem, and that is that back to that budget deficit and back to the dependency on just printing money, depending on following up with one mistake with another mistake, and that is counterfeiting. The founders hated counterfeiters. They even invoked the death penalties for people who would counterfeit, government documents like the Federal Reserve, like the gold certificate. They in 1792 they had a coinage act that said that was so bad because they had gone through runaway inflation. They said you couldn't print money. That's how serious they thought it was. But that's long gone. Nobody knows that history, and they're not going to learn it in the public schools. So we're going to see this. The consequence of this will be eventually the destruction of money, because I think it's politically impossible for Washington ever, no matter how well-intended they are. Of course, we don't have enough people there to do it, but there would be so much anger if all of a sudden you say, no more debt, no more printing of money. It would be, you know, if you could take the heat for a year, things would boom again. But they would not do that, you know, when the Great Depression, recession that we're in now, they just papered it all over. And a lot of people believe that it's all been taken care of. But in the next year or two, we'll find out that really it hasn't.
Governments go bankrupt all the time, and well before they get to $20 trillion. We're the first to reach this huge amount. So you can manipulate economic laws, supply and demand for a while, but ultimately you get checkmated. What are the odds that the United States has figured out the formula of actually continuing that ad infinitum?
Yeah, and there'll be an economic limitation to it, and that's how it's going to end. Right now, the market is in such shape that they can't allow interest rates to go up, you know, a quarter point twice over 10 years, you know, I mean, and they, because it's so deadly. With a $20 trillion debt, at least that's the nominal debt, the interest rates in 2000 for all the government debt average ought to be over 6%, which was to us now, that's a high percentage. But there was a time when government debt was 15% in the 1970s. And we're shifting to that period of time where interest rates will go up. But the government and the Federal Reserve is going to do anything conceivable to keep these interest rates low. But for right now, interest rates are 1%, 2%, very, very low. If you take a $20 trillion debt and you raise interest rates, or the market raises interest rates up to 6%, you're talking about just interest payments of $1.2 trillion. And that's separate from the ordinary budget, which is like $1 trillion in debt anyway each year. So it cannot stand it. And that is why we're locked in place, and this is going to continue until ultimately people give up confidence in the currency. But even if interest rates go to 3%, that's over $500 billion more interest payments. So this whole thing, the debt is huge. It has to be paid. Interest rates a big factor. They're not able to allow interest rates to go up. So we're up against the wall on this, and it can't be solved by offering a lot more spending and reassuring the people that we can maintain our empire around the world. We can keep spending this money, and we can, significantly increase military spending. It won't work. There will come a time when the chickens will come home to roost. People will be unhappy with us because we have had tremendous advantage by issuing the reserve of the world. It used to be gold. But now people say, oh, no, we don't need that. We just need American dollars because it used to be gold, but we'll just pretend it still is gold. So we've had tremendous benefits. That's why we can have a negative trade balance. We can buy stuff from around the world because they're taking our paper money and they're giving us stuff. And a lot of people think, oh, that's horrible, horrible. But that will end, and people are going to have payback. They're going to pay back because we have been so powerful with our reserve currency, but we've also been overly aggressive with expanding our empire around the world and dictating to other people what they should do. And there's a lot of people who've gotten tired of that. So eventually this is all going to come together, and it's not going to be good. And that's why we have to have in place what really should be the answer to this. And of course, mostly for what we're talking right now, what the answer would be is to have a sound currency so that governments couldn't live beyond its means.
Yes, and that'll be the topic of the last question here, and that's on what should be done. Now, economic pain is unavoidable. The die has been cast. But the amount of pain that each individual experiences, we still have some control. So what should be done by both government and individuals to lessen the pain, if you will?
Well, that's the tough one. And I think that in theory, we know exactly what has to be done and will be done eventually. And if we as a country and a government would do it, it would work out. And what I proposed, in my campaigning when I was in the presidential race was systematically start cutting back. But you can't do that by cutting back Social Security and child care because people have become so dependent on it. I think the only place that where you can cut and get things back to order would be dealing with our empire, because we're spending $1 trillion a year on the empire, and we don't need it. It makes us, more vulnerable. So do that and start working out, cut it down. And it could be done, but I'm pessimistic. It's not going to happen. So I think the next best thing that we can do as a people would be through the educational system outside of the government educational system, because they're not going to teach, the true facts about economic policy. They're not going to emphasize to our young kids about the runaway inflation of the continental money and why we had a gold standard and why a central bank was started. And they would explain is that. So we have to, if we're looking for a replacement and a substitute when the crisis comes, it has to go get elsewhere. And this is, of course, one reason why I have a homeschooling program. I think we should have as many homeschooling programs as possible. I think we should have private schools. And I think we should continue to work. I have a lot of members in my family that teach in government schools. And we should encourage teachers and all to do their very best to give honest answers to children and give them honest economic policies. And in this area, we've had some success. There's more professors now that know and understand something about Austrian economics. There's a greater understanding about these answers outside of government. There are many libertarian free market think tanks now. When I got interested in this in the 1950s, there was essentially nothing. And I've mentioned so many times that I was influenced a lot by Leonard Reed and the Foundation for Economic Education, because he preserved and promoted, sound economic thinking. And he was a friend of von Mises and talked about Austrian economics. And the numbers are so different now than before. It would have been unheard of for us to be able to have our program, the Liberty Report, because there would be zero audience. Now there's interest. People are concerned and worried, and they've heard about this, and they want to know more about it. So I think that's where we're making progress. But this idea of individuals say, what can I do? I want to run for Congress and go up and vote against those programs. Well, you can do it if you're doing it for the right reason, but if you're doing it because you want to be a congressman, that's forget it. It won't do any good, because to be a congressman, sometime it's only unusual, to be in the right place at the right time to become a congressman if you're not going to participate in the system. And you can be a congressman and be involved in politics, but ultimately we need a whole new generation, and that's why I still go to the campuses to show them what can be done. What is the alternative? Do we have to have this spending? Can we survive with less spending? And obviously the case. And we have to present this not in a fashion which sounds threatening, because it's a moral issue. We talked a little bit about the morality of this spending and the system that we have. It is a moral issue, because I so strongly believe that we have a moral right to our life and our liberty, which has come from our Creator and not from our government. If we start there and work with it, actually, I think that things can work out. But people have to understand, if there are tough times for 6 months or a year, that they understand what's happening. It's sort of like people who are addicted to a drug. They have to get off of it and suffer the consequences of the withdrawal. If you have a cancer and you have to have some treatment intensive treatment for a year to save your life, you don't want that year, but the alternative isn't very, very good. And that's the way we should be looking at the alternative, to say, no, we don't want to go through the hard times of what it would be like to cut the spending. Well, if you don't, the tough times might be a lot worse. But ultimately, it's the belief and understanding of what a free society is all about. And that's where we should put our energy. And that's why we should be optimistic. Chris, I want to thank you for being with us today on Mythbusters.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
And I want to thank our audience today for joining us with the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Please come back soon.